Hello, I'm Christopher Kissan, and this is Ireland's Edge. On today's episode, what is the future of a world without news? The Irish were once the biggest newspaper readers in Europe, but in recent years our interest has begun to decline, much like newspaper circulation all around the world. News reporting and investigative journalism are now facing an existential shortage of money, while trust in information itself is rapidly declining due to fake news and the excesses of social media. At Ireland's Edge in Dingle, I was joined by three extraordinary women who edit independent news outlets in Ireland to discuss the challenges facing their work. Sinead Carroll is the editor of thejournal.ie, where she has worked for the past 12 years. She is a regular presenter and contributor on national television and radio, covering news, politics and indeed sport. Siobhan Holliman is deputy editor of the Tuam Herald and was appointed by the government as a member of the Future of Media Commission. She also serves on the Press Council and has previously worked in local radio. Siobhan Cronin is the editor of the Southern Star in West Cork, the first woman editor in the paper's 135-year history. She has previously worked as a journalist and editor with the Irish Independent and the Irish Examiner and sits on the Press Council. I began by asking her about her experience moving from Dublin to West Cork to take up the editorship of one of Ireland's oldest local newspapers.
We have three fascinating women who have different experiences in the newspaper and news business in different ways to join me here this afternoon. We have on the couch two women called Siobhan. I'm going to try not to get them confused. We have Siobhan Holliman, who is deputy editor of the Tuam Herald, and Siobhan Cronin, who is the editor of the Southern Star. And Siobhan Holliman was on the Future of Media Commission, and Siobhan Cronin, you're on the Press Council. Are you on the Press Council as well? You're on the Press Council as well. And over here we have Sinead Carroll, who is the editor of thejournal.ie, which many of you will be familiar with. It's kind of Ireland's leading independent online news outlet. And we're going to be talking about the challenges for news in a country where, like, as I said, historically, Irish people were huge consumers of newspapers, some of the biggest readers of newspapers in the world. And while that has declined somewhat in recent years in some ways, Irish people still love the news, to talk about the news. You know, the 6-1 and the 9 o'clock news and the newspaper are all still huge. So I wonder if we could start off by talking about your careers in news and how the relationship between local news, national news and online news has kind of run through those different things. Siobhan Cronin, you started in local newspapers, you worked in national newspapers, and then you've gone, as it were, back to local newspapers to go and edit the Southern Star, which is one of the kind of iconic newspapers of Munster. What has that experience been like of moving through those different things from the local to the national back to the local again?
Well, I started my career in the Leitrim Observer, in Leitrim, which is still going strong. And I was there for a few years and I moved to Longford, and then I was editing in Dublin Magazine for a while. And then I moved to The Independent, and after that I moved down to The Examiner. So they always say about Cork people, when are you coming home? So I did eventually go home. And now I'm at the Southern Star. So I kind of bookended my career, I suppose, really with local newspapers. And I did a little bit of freelance in the middle for some Irish Examiner titles in the Midlands. So I suppose my experience has been, I was pre-digital and now we're in the thick of digital. So I've kind of seen that transition that papers have gone through from having no digital arm at all, 100% print, to now where, you know, it's the digital arm is every bit as important as the print edition for us, and probably, no doubt, in the future, more important. So I suppose I've kind of spanned the whole spectrum there.
What was the reaction of people who you had worked with in the national press when you said, I'm going back to edit a local regional newspaper?
Well, when they heard it was West Cork, they were like, have you any jobs going? And they're still asking me that. So it is an idyllic job for a journalist, editor of the local newspaper. If anyone's read the shipping news, it's not quite as dramatic as that, but it is pretty similar. So they were just very jealous. And I suppose at the time they probably thought, you know, are you leaving the excitement of, you know, Dublin and the centre of the universe, according to them? But I, as I always say, sometimes friends will ring and they'll say, is it your quiet day today? And like when I started in journalism, there were quiet days, the day the paper came out and maybe the day after. And I just say, no, there's no such thing as a quiet day, even at the weekends. It's 24/7. There's always something happening. You have to be on digital if the paper has gone to press. So it's, you know, it's just as busy as I ever was in Dublin. It's just different busy.
Sinead, I suppose probably nobody in Ireland knows more about digital being 24/7 than you as the editor of the Journal. What has your experience been like in something that was digital first, that was actually, you know, quite unique when the Journal started, online news that was specific to Ireland rather than people going to the Guardian or the BBC or whatever? Like, what has your experience been like through your career?
Well, my first experience of news was working in the literal news agents in Selbridge, where I'm from. And because it was such a commuter town and people used to, like, there was very few people from Selbridge. It was all people like my parents or Clare and Tipperary. And so we sold all the locals' newspapers. We got the local newspapers from everywhere, and people would come in to pick up the Southern Star if they were Cork. Or so even from that age, like 15, 16, kind of getting that, the news from all the locals used to be a really fascinating day when the locals would come in. When I started my career, I actually started my career in New York. I was lucky enough to get an internship there, and back in 2007, and that was kind of the start of Facebook and the start of social media. And I just had a very insightful editor who started all of us working on some digital content for the magazine that we worked with. So there was no digital magazine, but she had us working on content that could be shared on social media. So kind of from the get-go, I had digital experience. So when the Journal started up, I kind of knocked down their door. I'd had that bit of experience in New York, and I knew that that's what I'd wanted to do, even though it was magazine work that I was really doing. And so I kind of kept knocking at their door until they let me in. And it was interesting because for those first 2 years of the Journal starting up, very few other outlets were doing anything other than putting the content from their newspaper up online. And then it takes a long time. The ask of these outlets, they had to change from being newspapers that were going to print every day to being able to resource a newsroom that was publishing almost 24/7. So for places like RTE, maybe they could have been further ahead, but for places like the Irish Times, the Indo, the Examiner, having to create basically two newsrooms, and then we kind of hastened them along because we were there doing it, being digital first. So I think there used to be quiet days, even though we were 24/7, and then 2016 happened, and then from 2016 on, there have been no quiet days. But before 2016, even digitally, there used to be. but the world changed in 2016.
It does feel like that was kind of an inflection point where everything went a bit crazy. But Siobhan Holliman, I wonder, can I ask you, you know, Sinead mentioned there working in the newsagent, like seeing all the different regional newspapers that people had. From your work on the Future of Media Commission, obviously you had a big experience of that, but also the Tuam Herald is one of the oldest independent regional newspapers in Ireland. What has been your experience of working in the news industry, to use that horrible term, in Ireland?
Yeah, I mean, it's no 2 days are the same, and I suppose that's people kind of find that hard to understand, but really there aren't 2 days that are the same when you're working in the newspaper industry or the media industry, depending on what you're covering. Hopefully you shouldn't have 2 days the same anyway. I started out actually in local radio, and much to the disgust of my family, I actually worked in Mayo, which was kind of a hard move coming from Galway, but it was a great insight, I have to say, into Mayo and into local journalism, because Mayo people love local, I have to say, and they literally hang on every word and are very interactive. They do like to ring you up personally and comment and so look, it was a great learning ground, and I moved then from Mayo, and I did return to Galway and worked in local radio in Galway for 5 years, and then I took the plunge and stepped into the waters of local newspapers. And I suppose people were very surprised at the time, you know, God, why would you go from radio to the newspaper? They somehow saw the radio as more glamorous, I think, than the newspaper. And then there were people going, but, you know, how would you write? You know, don't you just read the news? And I said, well, you know, do you get to go shopping in between the news bulletins? And not really, no, yeah, you know, and, you know, do more important people get their name up on the death notice first before you read them out? So, yeah.
Conspiracy theory for many years.
Yeah. And, you know, that can still happen, I think, from what I hear. But, yeah, so I moved into local newspapers, and I have to say, it gave me a new lease of life for writing. I used to write, and obviously when you're with radio, you can write, but it's very condensed. So it gives you a different perspective and gives you a different, using different skills in journalism, which was great. But, you know, Siobhan was saying about, you know, going for the digital. Like, I remember actually going from black and white to colour. I remember, like, going from cutting radio tape with a razor, which probably wouldn't meet health and safety standards now, but that's how we used to edit, you know what I mean, when to stick it together. So things have really changed in 20 years in local media. And, you know, everyone's going, oh, the digital transformation, but the way news is produced has always been changing and evolving. You know, I think just the digital transformation probably happened really quickly. Mm-hmm. But things have always evolved, and journalism has evolved with it. And I think local journalism is just, you know, there's no more local than you can get, because you meet these people on your street every day. They are your connection, and, you know, you're accountable to them. They interact with you. They are your stories. So it's there's no distance between you. And I think that makes you perhaps a wee bit more mindful about, you know, in the care that you give your interviewees as well. But it's lovely. You know, it's lovely when people ring you up and say, oh, hiya, you know, I was wondering, would you mind covering this? Or it's very nice and enjoyable, and hopefully it will continue.
You mentioned there about, like, the way that the medium changes, right? You know, whether you go from using tapes to using recordings, whether you go from using digital to print, colour to black and white, and so on. But at the end of the day, what attracts people to the news, especially, I think, in this country historically, has been the news itself, right? The reporting of that news. And Siobhan Cronin, I wonder if I could ask you about whether that has been changing over the last few years, because it is noticeable to me as a news reader how much of the news at a national and international level at the moment is opinion-based. Reporting seems to have gone, not necessarily out of fashion, but it's just been downgraded as a priority in a lot of news organisations. You don't really have that luxury in a local newspaper, because what people want is reporting. Is there a shift? Is there a dangerous shift going on between the balance of those things in journalism at the moment?
I think there is, for sure, but I think it's more at a national level. I don't think it has infiltrated the local, because, as you say, if you don't have local news in a local newspaper, it won't sell, and that's what people want to read. And, like, for a few years before I was there, we didn't cover court cases in the Southern Star for about 10 or 15 years. And, you know, I think our sales have pretty much held up over the last few years, and I think a lot of that is attributable to the court cases, because people want to read what their neighbour was doing in court last week. And Irish people love to gossip, and I think, you know, that has been one of our strengths, be it good or bad. But I've made a decision not to have too many opinion pieces in the newspaper. I think it's, to an extent, it's lazy journalism. It's also cheap journalism. You know, you just pay someone X amount every week, and, you know, it's in the budget, and they produce whatever. So we actually only have two pieces that are contributed every week to us. There are two. One is a humour piece, one is a political humorous piece. And beyond that, if anybody asks me, I say we don't really do opinion pieces, we do news. So the longer we can now, that it's a very resource heavy policy, because you're sending reporters out constantly to cover stuff. And what also has changed, of course, is that they're not just doing coming back and writing. Not only are they not coming back and writing, they're writing in the courtroom or in the coffee shop next door, but they're also doing video. They're also maybe taking some of it for a podcast, a news podcast a week later. So there's an awful lot going on there. So it's very resource heavy, but it's still, if you're a local newspaper, I think you have to be a local newspaper.
Sinead, you're kind of at the sharp end of this in terms of, like, the online news space is so full of opinion, and a lot of it seems aimed, because of the need to get clicks and eyeballs and all these horrible phrases that people use, at creating outrage and making people angry and so on. The journalist, like, does a lot of reporting, like, we have journalists, and that is, as Siobhan Cronin mentioned, they're expensive. Is that a challenge for you, doing online news where you're trying to do news as opposed to just get people angry to click on things?
Yeah, interestingly, we have a very similar protocol in the journal for opinion pieces. So we do have an opinion section, but what we ask for from our writers in that section is either they have a proven expertise, so it's not like we don't have, say, a political commentator who just each week will, you know, take on a new topic. It has to be someone with a specific expertise in that area if they're going to write about a topic, or first person experience, like, I have experience of X and therefore I can write about it from that point of view. So they're the two things we kind of ask for if there is opinion pieces in the journal. So yeah, the majority of the stuff that we budget, like, my entire budget almost entirely goes on salary of our journalists, of our reporters. And it is a huge challenge because the resources are very, very constrained in media. Advertising hasn't bounced back since COVID, so the problems are exacerbated over the last 3 years. And I think this is where you get some of the drive to opinion across broadcasters and print titles online and legacy, that it can be easier to engage an audience with opinion than it is with information. So what you see, and we're talking about trust, is you see the outcome of that is pushing people into corners and having much more divisive debates about things rather than conversations. So say our podcast every week is called The Explainer, and our tag for it is News Without the Noise, because we were trying to provide an antidote to debate shows on television and radio for some people who just wanted to, okay, there's a consultative forum on neutrality that people seem to be really angry about, and every time I hear a radio debate about it, it's one person shouting from a very specific corner, shouting into another corner, and I don't know what they're talking about because I don't have expertise in security or military or the history of our neutrality. So that week we did a 25-minute explainer on where our neutrality came from with Dermot Ferrier, one of like the preeminent historians in the country, and put that out. So we try and think of ways that not only we do the reporting every day, but we try and meet the reader where they are, what questions they have, and how we can get the information that they want so that they can understand the whole ecosystem a bit more. Because if you go into those radio debates, then they can be a bit more fun if you can understand why they're such argy-bargy. But if it's going over your head, it's bad for society, it's bad for everyone, it's bad for people's trust in media.
That kind of reporting is, in many ways, it is actually just providing a public service. And Siobhan Holman, one of the things the Future of Media Commission looked at was the fact that, you know, a lot of local newspapers and local radio and things are providing a public service. And as Sinead mentioned there, you know, there are huge resources necessary. Well, not huge, but like there are major resources necessary to do proper reporting, where somebody goes and actually reports the news, asks the question, goes to the court cases, goes through the documents and so on. And if we're just relying on advertisers to be able to fund that, that doesn't seem to be working. Like, what is the future of being able to fund that kind of journalism?
I think it's difficult, and there's no one fix all. As you said, the Future Media Commission noted that public service content, we were used to using public service media and public service broadcasting in relation to RTE, but public service content is the likes of your local courts, your county councils, your joint policing committees, things where elected representatives make decisions that affect your communities and that you should be aware of, the good and the bad. So, but they do take people to actually attend. You can't, well, some, but you can't sit at your desk, and you shouldn't be, you know, you need to be there in person to give a balanced and objective report on things. Two things that we've noticed. One, yes, with ever-decreasing resources in newsrooms, and by resources in newsrooms, I actually mean journalists losing their jobs. You know, this is it. You know, there are some people in some newsrooms around the county who literally have to produce a newspaper on their own. They've gone from like 5-6 newsrooms, journalists in the newsroom, down to like 1 or 2. And that just is not sustainable and is not the type of local journalism that you want. So in part of the Future of Media Commission, in order to try and support that and sustain it and bolster it, a number of schemes, I won't go into the whole detail, but basically a media fund has been approved by government, which will help out through various schemes for local democracy reporting, court reporting, digital transformation. So, you know, Siobhan is fortunate that in the Southern Star, they are very innovative, and they have invested wisely in the digital. That is not the case in all the newspapers around the country. They're all on different levels. Some people still are failing to embrace digital, even though, you know, they see digital as maybe something to look forward to, whereas digital is very much the present, and we have to understand that. So I suppose, you know, unfortunately, those schemes aren't up and running yet. You know, we had a delay in the Future of Media Commission report being published. There's now a delay in rolling out the schemes. Not, do I say, to any part of those involved at state level. They have been very helpful in moving them forward, but there's just been delays in getting them out. So But, you know, local democracy and local reporting, they're not always the sexy, you know, kitten clickbait stories that you want. A lot of them are, you know, can be budgets or county development plans, but these all impact people's lives. And when people are giving out about what happened to that road or why is that building there, or are they not doing anything about that? Normally they have discussed it at some council level, you know, and we have local elections coming up next year. And, you know, I do fear that there won't be given enough coverage in certain aspects of it when it's a really important time for local communities, that they have, you know, voices and that they're, you know, that they engage rather than just getting maybe a very loaded post on social media. So it's a challenge.
Sinead, do you want to come in?
Yeah, there? I was just going to say, with on the when you're talking about the importance of local journalism, you see that in the towns that it's for and in the areas it's for, but you also see that feeding up into the national media as well. Like if there's not strong journalism locally when something happens, or something happens that the national media don't find out about because the locals aren't there and the reporters aren't on the ground, that does a disservice to everybody, because we need local reporters on the ground to know how things operate. So there can be just big stories that happen in smaller towns and the national media flood down, and it's the local reporters who do most of that work when something like that happens. But also if we don't know what's happening in courts, you don't know what's happening with, say, in family courts or in local courts, we need to know what's happening to have a good picture of what's happening in the country. And noteworthy, our investigative sister site in the Journal, some of their most successful funding projects, so they ask for specific projects to be funded by their readers, some of their most successful funded projects have been kind of local issues about roads. What happened to this road? Why didn't it get built? Like, why are we still using glyphosate in X council and not Y council? Because people are really genuinely motivated to know what's going on in their locality.
And a lot of national newspapers have cut reporter roles, they've cut stringers, like all sorts of things that mean that they're buying in news maybe from agencies and so on, and then there's this gap where it's just, there's not actually anybody in Ireland reporting on stuff that is happening in Ireland. And that feeds in, you know, you mentioned local democracy in the elections next year. I mean, recent events in Dublin with the riots last week and everything, I suppose, highlighted this as well, that if people can't trust the information that they're getting, either because it's not there, which leaves a vacuum, or because they're being given bad information, then where does that leave them? Like, Siobhan Cronin, like, when you think about what your readers are seeing in the news that they're reading, do they still trust what they're being given? I mean, for a long time, newspapers were the gold standard for people in Ireland. Do people still trust what's in the papers?
Well, I think actually the Reuters Institute did some research into this. It was the 2023 report, I think, and they found that 68% of Irish people trusted their local newspaper, and that was higher than the trust in the national media. So I think we're probably, in a good way, falling a little bit behind the trend in local as regards national. And I suppose a lot of local papers haven't given them any reason not to, really. We haven't been caught out too often on mistruths or fake news. Yeah. And that's because our reporters are on the ground. They're visible. They're known by a lot of the readers. They might live next door to them. And also, I think what is a very good tool is video. Video is a very good tool for just showing people what's actually happening, you know, when they can visually see things. So that's been a real asset, I think, to us, you know, the visual end of things. So, I mean, I would hope going forward that, you know, we'll keep that level. It's quite a high level of trust, I think, 68%.
Important thing.
I
mean, you mentioned
our job is to keep that high.
You mentioned about people being, you know, news outlets being caught out, or, you know, it's not just always being caught out. Sometimes there is deliberate misinformation being spread by certain news outlets, which is even more sinister. But yesterday we had a discussion about artificial intelligence and the threat that AI-generated news or news that doesn't even exist can present to readers. Sinead, like, working in digital news, is that something that you're scared of? I mean, there have been a few cases in Ireland this year, haven't there, of an opinion piece got into the Irish Times that was actually AI generated, and certain local newspapers that are owned by an English conglomerate published a quite inflammatory opinion piece about refugees that had been generated by ChatGPT. I mean, when stuff starts getting into the paper that's been written by an AI bot,
yeah,
what are the implications of that for both readers and journalists?
Yeah, I think for us on the AI front, we were at a conference a couple of weeks ago, and on the misinformation and disinformation side, it's still a long way behind. Like, it's actual, just more traditional misinformation and disinformation from people who are putting it out, disinformation on purpose or misinformation by kind of accident or lack of media literacy. On the AI side, it'll be part of the media literacy that journalists will have to learn as they're coming up. So either continued development for people who are already working, or it'll be part of college courses for people who are coming into journalism. So I don't think there's any particular fear around it in the same way as it's just like the new thing that we have to come to terms with, in the same way we did with social media sites and whatever the new iteration of where people are. Like, now they're on TikTok, you know, a few years ago they were on Twitter. So it's just going to be part of our learning curve. I think, you know, those examples, like say with the Irish Times, when it was an error, it's just a different type of error, you know, that publishers and editors have to deal with. And obviously they're going to be much more on the lookout for things like that. I think when you're digital first, a lot of the things we end up seeing, we see them first because we're digital first and have been forever. You know, so we have our senior media producer has us talk, like, looking at AI stuff for the last couple of years and showing us like what to be looking out for and things like that. In terms of like what we fear on misinformation, I think the reader has a much bigger job. Like, Siobhan was talking there about how quick the digital transformation happened, but that's for readers too. So we're talking from a news media point of view. I was saying about, you know, some of the decisions that the industry have made have definitely eroded trust. But there's also the reader themselves has a lot of work to do, and we're asking them to do a lot when so much information is being thrown at them on social media sites, on broadcast, on print, and basically every time they pick up their phone, they're just being bombarded with information. That's a hard job, and there's been very little media literacy done with readers. And then on the other side, you have the newsmakers, you have politicians, you have authorities, you have companies, the people who end up being in the news. And they are also filtering information to readers through their own social media sites. So say if there's no one at a JPC or there's no one at a local council meeting and the councillors themselves are giving that information, if they're giving wrong information and there's no reporter in the room, these are the kind of problems that happen. Yeah. Because, you know, the information is coming from everywhere. So all the stakeholders in newsmaking have their individual responsibilities to get that level, because the trust levels in local are good, but, you know, the trend for nationals is still better than international, but it's trending downwards. And if you look at the younger cohorts, like of the 18 to 24 year old men in this country, over 40% of them distrust the national media. Yeah. Like, that is a terrifying statistic.
Yeah, it doesn't
for
take
all of us.
A, you know, a lot of imagination to draw a line from that to some recent events that we've seen. Siobhan, you wanted to come in there on
just on the statistic, I suppose another reason maybe why local newspapers, the figures are high, is because traditionally our demographic is a little bit older, so that may be reflected in that. But one positive I took from the whole AI thing, because, like, when I heard about AI, I was immediately petrified about job losses in the industry, because technology has only ever lost jobs in journalism, unfortunately. But I did hear something very positive about journalistic AI. So, I mean, there's fears that AI will, you know, editors will be able to, you know, just ask AI to write an article on X and it will be produced. But the, you know, there's been moves to try and make it a positive experience for journalism whereby, okay, you have to still go out, you have to gather the information, you have to interview the people, you get all your information, you come back, and then you feed it. You feed what's already fact-checked into AI, and then it may be... So there may be a little glimmer of hope there that that's something that maybe we could work with, you know, but there will still be job losses, you know, at the end of the day, so we do need to bear that in mind.
Mark Little mentioned yesterday that idea of, like, using AI as kind of a co-pilot thing, where, like, it's a tool rather than something that's replacing you, but you mentioned there, both of you mentioned that this idea of, like, what the reader has to do now, the work that they have to do to distinguish truth from falsehood or, you know, propaganda from news and stuff. Siobhan Holloman, do you think that, like, do people still read the way that they used to? Because, I mean, I remember, like, as a child watching my grandfather read The Kerryman, and, you know, he used to read every word of the paper. Mm. And a lot of people were like that, you know. That's not the way that you see people reading now.
No.
Has that affected the way that we consume the news?
You know, I mean, we used to have, there used to be, when the papers, our paper used to come out on a Wednesday evening. It now comes out on a Wednesday morning, but it used to be late afternoon, and I remember passing, it was on sale in the local pub, and there used to be like a pile of cars queuing up outside waiting for the newspaper delivery van to drop off the paper. And they'd all be eager to pick it up and read it, you know what I mean? And that has just disappeared. The idea that we all sit down and read the paper every week, let alone every day, you know, doesn't happen anymore. They're consuming news in different ways, and you know, there's still a very great appetite for news, I have to say. It's just the way we deliver it to them is evolving and changing. We have to figure out what ways we can give that to them in the most effective manner, I suppose, in the ways that they want it. You know, we insist, and print is lovely, and there are many people who want print, and we should continue to do that, but not everyone does it that way, and that's the progress we need to do. But people are reading, and I think I said to you earlier, Chris, that some of them aren't reading. We are like scrolling. We probably have, you know, repetition injury in our thumbs that we're using them up and down so much like this. And you know, people are commenting on perhaps threads or stories that, you know, they haven't even clicked in and read the story. So that, what do you do? You know, you can't force people to read something. You have to try and make it as best as you can. There are some people who have no interest in reading news and just want to vent.
Yeah.
And you can, we've tried different things of, you know, certain stories might go up or they just read the headline and misinterpret it. And that all comes back to media literacy, which Junaid mentioned as well. But media literacy starting at a young age in schools now as well. And we mentioned this in the Future of Media Commission report, and it is being taken part of a working group, how to help people as they're in school, in college. And this also has to come back in even journalism courses, you know, that they have a greater understanding of the impact of what they write or what they're looking at and to question.
You mentioned there that idea of the news mix that we get, right? We're consuming different sources, because obviously on your phone it might be the Journal followed by the Irish Times, followed by the Southern Star, followed by the whatever. You know, you're consuming things from different. It's not just sitting down and reading one newspaper. But Sinead, is there a danger there for us as a country that has now become, you know, almost entirely English-speaking, that in the English-speaking world we are a very small part, and that a lot of the English-speaking news is being produced outside of this country without really much use to it? Like, for you, as a site that is based in Ireland specifically, how do you operate in an online news space where, you know, I mean, what percentage of the English online news market is Ireland? Very, very small.
Yeah, so the challenge there is really on resources and revenue, because there's only so much news that people are going to pay for. And in an English-speaking market, a lot of people in Ireland, that Reuters report again, will show that a lot of people in Ireland are spending their news money on subscriptions to the New York Times. And they'll also, if they have niche interests, will often go to the Financial Times or The Economist. And they're really popular titles in Ireland. So in an English-speaking market, you're vying for eyes, and you're vying for loyalty, and you're vying for money in a much more crowded space. And then the challenge, like, is to, when people are able to get that copy, is like, we're probably not going to be able to compete with them on an international front and covering international news, but how to make sure that they're interested in Irish topics, and also not importing some of the culture wars and other debates that are happening in other countries that haven't come here. Like, and that is, again, what has happened here over the last few years. Like, people will become involved in debates over things that Donald Trump has done, and that'll take up airtime and airspace and column space rather than issues that are going to have much more impact on people's lives here. So again, I think a lot of the challenges and outcomes are things that impact readers more than the journalists, but we have to make good decisions about what we're spending our time doing, what we're spending our budgets on, and how we're getting that information across.
I wonder, is there an issue of ownership here as well, Siobhan Cronin, like, where, you know, you and Siobhan Holloman, you also both work for independently owned local newspapers. A lot of the local newspapers in Ireland are now owned by either British or European conglomerates. The Kerryman included is owned by Mediahoise. So, like, you know, if you want to take a subscription to the Kerryman, you're taking out a subscription to independent.ie, which is owned by an international company, blah, blah, blah. And obviously, you know, investment that keeps newspapers open is a good thing. But is there a challenge there for Irish news when increasingly the Irish news space is dominated by editors and companies that aren't based in Ireland, where Ireland is not the focus?
Well, I mean, I think if they want to keep their profits up, they'll have to keep Irish news on the agenda of their Irish titles. But I think the audience here would be shocked if they knew how many of our titles, local and local radio included, are owned by UK or Belgian or further afield companies. There's actually a very tiny percentage are actually Irish-owned now. And I think that came to the fore maybe in that issue where you mentioned the local newspaper owned by UK Group that put the article that was ChatGPT generated. It almost seemed like an experiment that was being carried out on the Irish people by a foreign title. But what really assured me at the time was that within a few hours there was such a backlash about that that it was taken down. So at least the Irish are, you know, we're intelligent enough and we're educated enough to know when something is wrong. And I would really hope that, you know, that that will continue and that pressure will be always put on, you know, the owners of these large media groups, you know, to keep the moral code up there, you know.
You mentioned there the idea of the vacuum, right? I mean, a few years ago we had John Mulholland here, the editor of The Guardian US, and John was talking about how in there are places in the US now that they call news deserts where there's no local news. Like, there are whole states where there's no locally owned newspaper. So there were often investigations that, you know, they were doing in Louisiana or whatever, where they were like almost shocked that there was nobody else locally investigating this because there were no journalists being employed to do that. Obviously, there's a huge danger of that happening in a small country with youth that uses the language of bigger countries around it. But are we pessimistic or are we optimistic? I mean, often when people talk about newspapers in Ireland, it sounds like it's sort of like a dying industry that, you know, you're all going to be out of a job and people are not going to buy the paper anymore. But at the same time, people still do buy papers. Like, we still have above the European average of people reading newspapers and so on. And people are obviously still interested. So is it a... Are we pessimistic or are we optimistic, Siobhan Holman?
I'm always an optimist, I have to say. Sometimes people might say I'm in denial, but I'll go for optimism. Yeah, I mean, there are news deserts, but I think there are two types of deserts. You can have the desert where there is actually nothing, and then you can have the desert which is just the one voice. And I think you mentioned there about... our paper was founded in 1837 and has always been independently owned. And, you know... As an employee, I feel fortunate about that. It has its downs, that we don't benefit perhaps from, you know, other words of investment. But the other desert I feel is that, you know, it becomes homogenous content. I was online the other day and I saw four or five titles and they were all running the same story. And they were all in different parts of the country. Like, that is not local news. The one voice, the one story, the one issue, and none of them were local stories. You know, we have to realise what is our social function and what do our community come to us for. And once you disconnect with your community, I think that is a warning sign as well. You know, the desert can also happen when journalists now aren't actually covering events at all. They're sitting at their computer, remotely covering things, not talking to people, not interviewing people, not going to getting a first-hand account of things. And it's very dangerous. We are not harvesters, you know. And there is a trend, a very worrying trend, that people are sitting at desks making news out of social media comments. And for me, that is not news. You go directly to your source. And it goes back to regulation as well. And, you know, it's easy to click through on things, like things from a distance, you know, but if you use that actually reality, the real of what you're doing, then it just feeds disinformation and discontent.
Siobhan Cronin, the Southern Star back in the 19th century had a rival local newspaper, the Skibbereen Eagle, that was famous for saying that they were keeping a keen eye on the Tsar of Russia. Which would be a good thing for papers to be doing now, I suppose, as well with Putin. But you know, in those days, you know, Siobhan Holland mentioned that Tuam Herald goes back to 1837. The Southern Star goes back a very long time. A lot of regional newspapers in Ireland go back a very, very long time. So they're obviously not easy to shift. Are you optimistic or pessimistic as somebody who's come back to edit one?
Well, I'm very optimistic, and actually the Skibbereen Eagle was subsumed into the Southern Star. So I have to say I got great joy last year when the fishermen of Castletown Bear were keeping an eye on Russia, if you remember, and we were able to bring back the headline. We gave that headline a second run for its money. I'm very optimistic because I think that the Irish people... Like, we are known as readers, like, around the world. We have a voracious appetite for reading and for gossip, and you put the two together and you get a local newspaper. So I'm very, very optimistic that... I think the national titles have a much tougher job ahead of them, and I hope I'm not wrong in this, but I think that local news will last. Because I think, like, people talk about unique selling points. I think our USP is that we're local. I brought in a hyper-local news policy, so nothing goes in the newspaper that doesn't have a West Cork angle. So, I mean, how parochial is that? But I think people love it because they know they're not going to get it anywhere else. Yeah. They're not going to see it on any other website except ours. And that's, I think, what's kept us fresh and kept us... And at the end of the day, if you buy your local paper, what do you want to read in it? Only, you know, local news.
Sinead, I'll give you the final word. Are you optimistic or pessimistic about the news industry in Ireland?
I think there's a couple of things to be optimistic about. Our CEO in the Journal always says, like, the amount of people who pay for news now is small but significant, and how we're asking people to pay for news in the Journal is we never want to go behind a paywall, and we won't go behind a paywall because the information we put out, because we're information-led and information-first, we think it's very important that it's not just the state broad, it's not just the national broadcaster doing that, it's not just RTE. So that's very much part of our ethos, and what we ask people to do is the Guardian model. So if you feel like your next-door neighbour should have access to news but maybe can't pay, that you contribute for them. The amount of people doing that is very significant, particularly around, like, we saw a massive uptick in our contributions during our coverage of the riot and the days afterwards. So that makes me really optimistic. We have a lot of work to do to make it really work. And then the young journalists coming out of university make me really optimistic as well, because they're coming out with the same drive and that same wish to tell the news, and they don't want to be social media content creators. They don't want to be, you know, Twitter famous. They really, really just want to tell the news, and that makes me really optimistic, because they're, you know, 21, 22-year-olds coming out with that kind of drive. None of them know how to make a phone call because kids don't make phone calls.
That's true.
But once we teach them how to do that... then it's all going to be fine.
And use a pen and paper as well. I've had so many students come in, you know, and I said, oh, I'll get you a notebook. And they're kind of looking at me.
What's that?
I said, you know, a notebook, right? I did a presentation and I actually had to put a picture of said notebook up on screen. I said, notebook, right? You know, like you write down. And... they just don't, and you know, they said, well, I record everything, and I said, but you can't record everything. I said, you can't go into court and record court. What? And I said, no. And I said, you can't go into a county council meeting and start recording that. Really? And I said, no. And so I think, you know, there is that great optimism that Sinead's talked about. They are hungry and eager and everything, but they, unfortunately, some of the students aren't giving the real bread and butter bits that they are missing. And I think with some of the fight for quickness of news, we're losing skills. And one thing that we found in the Future of Media Commission and with the local democracy schemes coming forward is, yes, we will have these posts to fill, but do they have that skill set to actually go out and do the work? Because most of the people who've been in, I started out, I remember going to my first county council meeting, I said, oh my word, what are they on about? Like, we have 39 councillors from 5 different areas, some from Connemara, right, that speak a whole different language, and some...
literally.
Yeah, in Tuam, which is a whole different language there as well. They have their own language. So, you know, it takes a lot in, and that takes training, and we're running out of time on the training. So we don't want desk-based journalism just harvesting, and... that opens to misinformation as well. I mean, we've had some, you know, people saying, oh, a shop is closed and, oh, that's terrible and whatever, and that is not true. You know, so we can go from big misinformation to small parts of information, and we just want to get things better.
Maybe then in independent paper there is still hope, so we hope so anyway.
As long as we kind of cling on, but I won't. I'm going to be positive and say, yes, we are here.
Well, thank you to the three of you for joining me. It's been a real pleasure to have... three women editors of independent news organisations, both of which are things that we want to see much more of in this country. It's been a fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much to Siobhan Holloman, Siobhan Cronin and Sinead Carroll for joining me in Tingle. On next week's episode, we'll hear from the Artistic Director of the Abbey Theatre, Katrina McLaughlin. Make sure you don't miss that or any of our future episodes. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. This has been a South Wind Blows production, and I'm Christopher Cassan. Thank you for joining us. I look forward to your company next time on Ireland's Edge.